Well, let's turn to the book of Proverbs. We're getting close to the end of this series. I have only one, maybe two lessons left. Haven't quite decided how to break it all down yet, but we are almost done. We're looking at the third part of the sub-series on the family, right? Today, our study of Proverbs continues on the topic of the family. We saw a couple weeks ago what wisdom we could glean from Proverbs for husbands and wives, generally. Then we looked in more detail at chapter 31 and the excellent wife, the last time we met on this. And in today's lesson, we're going to examine the wisdom that Proverbs has to offer to parents and children. Parents and children. All right, I know most everybody here has got children that are grown and out of the nest, right? That's okay. You can pass this on to your grandbabies if you need to, right? Whatever it takes. But parents and children, as we're going to see, the book of Proverbs, when it comes to parents and children, focuses almost entirely on the issue of discipline. That's what it focuses on. Sorry, Oliver. Discipline. But just like church discipline, the discipline of children comes in two forms. The positive and the negative. Or the formative and the corrective. Right?
The carrot and the stick.
Not exactly, but close, yep. But let's begin with the positive. So the first thing I want us to look at is the formative discipline of children. The formative discipline of children. We'll be looking at chapter 22 here in a minute. That's where we're going to turn first. But the formative discipline of children has to do with teaching or instructing children in what they need to know. That's formative discipline. Instructing them in what they need to know. Now, you know, of course, all of us know, that children need to learn a lot of things. A lot of things. Can't even give you a short list. I'm going to give you a very short list. But this list is very, very short. They need to know how to feed themselves. Right? They need to know how to clothe themselves. They need to know how to tie their shoes. Right? These are some of the first things we teach them, right? What's that?
They don't have ties on shoes anymore.
Not anymore, that's right. But they need to know how to change a tire on a car, right? They need to know how to add and subtract, right? You hope they learn that. Many, many practical things, right? But Proverbs doesn't talk about those things. It doesn't talk about those kinds of things. It talks instead about wisdom, about morality, about the fear of the Lord, right? What Proverbs is concerned about, what God is concerned about, is children developing a virtuous, godly character, right? That's what it focuses on. That, above all, is what parents are called to teach their children. That is the discipline that is to be formed in them, right? Godly character. So we'll start off in Proverbs 22, very, very well-known verse. Verse 6. Train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. Now, what are parents called to do here? What are they called to do here?
Train.
Train up a child in the way he should go, right? That word train, no doubt, includes a whole lot more than just teaching. Probably overlaps with the second topic we're going to look at too. But it certainly includes teaching, no doubt, right? It definitely includes teaching. But, so we're called to train up a child, which involves teaching them. But what are they to teach them? Notice, the way he should go. What is that? What is the way they should go?
Not only telling them, but living it
Okay. I guess what I'm asking Judy is, what is the way? What's that? Godly direction. That's why I've been talking about godly character, right? Already. The way they should go has to do with walking in the ways of the Lord. Yes.
Well, if you think about a train, a train, one car follows the other.
Okay.
So you should be the lead car and your child should follow.
Okay. That's a good illustration, but it still doesn't tell me where the tracks are going.
You gotta stay on track.
Yeah, yeah. But what are the tracks and where are they going? But I think Judy hit the nail on the head. It's the ways of the Lord, right? The godly way, right?
Paul.
In the fear of the Lord, yeah.
Paul says something to the effect of, follow me as I follow the Lord.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's in 1 Corinthians, actually, right? So if we're teaching children the way they should go, train them up in the way they should go, well, then what is the hope or expectation that parents have in the last part of that verse?
When he's old,
he won't turn away from it, right? When he's old, he won't depart from it, right? You teach a child at a young age, put him on the straight and narrow, and the hope, I hesitate to say promise because we know there are exceptions, right? But the promise, if you will, is that they'll stick to it for their whole lives, right? That's exactly right. They'll take the lessons to heart. Now, with that in mind, turn back, all the way back to chapter 3. Chapter 3. And verse 1. Oliver, read that for us. Chapter 3, verse 1.
My son, do not forget my law, but let your heart guard my commandments.
Okay. And then Rhonda, flip over to chapter 7 and read the first two verses. 7 verses 1 and 2.
My son, keep my words and lay up my commandments with
thee. That's
right. Keep my commandments and live.
Okay.
And my law as the apple of thine eye.
All right. So looking at the text in chapter 3 that Oliver read, as well as that text right there, what are parents to teach their children?
Commandments.
Commandments. Now notice, it's interesting though, that in those texts, it's the father speaking to his son, and he says, my commandments. Did you notice that? My commandments. But where do you think the father is getting his commandments from?
The Torah.
From God, right? Ultimately getting them from God. The idea here is the father's passing on the commandments he gets from the Lord. Actually, he got them from his father, right? The father got them from his father, who's got them from his father, and passing them on down. But ultimately, they come from the Lord. No doubt, the background here is surely from Deuteronomy. Turn to Deuteronomy. We read this on Sunday. Deuteronomy chapter 6. Deuteronomy 6 and verses 4 through 9. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. These words which I am commanding you today shall be on your heart. You shall, notice, you shall teach them diligently to your sons and shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontals on your forehead. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. The idea here is that it should be part of your daily life, right? Teaching the commandments to your children, right? So just like Lois and Eunice, who are they?
Timothy's
grandmother and mother. Make sure y'all were paying attention on Sunday, right? Just like Lois and Eunice taught Timothy the scriptures, parents today are called to do the same for their children, right? And let's don't forget what the Bible is all about. In the children's catechism is the question, what does the Bible teach us? Right? It's one of the questions that they'll be learning, right, Miss Sandra? What does the Bible teach us? And the answer to that question is, anybody know? Do you remember, Oliver? It's been too long ago, huh? You don't remember that? Well, close. But the actual answer written in the catechism is the Bible teaches us who God is and what he requires of us. Isn't that great? It's exactly what the Bible does. It teaches us who God is and what he requires of us. So, first and foremost, there is the positive formative discipline involving the teaching of God's word to children. But there is also, secondly, the corrective discipline of children. The corrective discipline of children. As you probably know, no secret, Proverbs has much to say about this. Corrective discipline, according to Scripture, and especially in Proverbs, involves what we call corporal punishment. Corporal punishment. Have you ever wondered about that word, corporal? We, in the Army, we had corporals, right? But it's a totally different word. The word corporal comes from the Latin corpus, which means body, right? Body.
Corpse. We get corpse.
You get the word corpse from it, right? So corporal punishment means the punishment of the body, right? You get it now? That's why we call it corporal punishment. Proverbs speaks of corporal punishment in terms of the rod, right? You've heard about the rod of discipline. Something that's used to give a child what you and I would call a whooping, right?
We had to go get our own
shoe. We did too, Judy. That was a nightmare.
And she wouldn't take them if they were
a
little bitty.
Mm-hmm. You had to pick the right one. That's right. But and then in school you get the paddle, right? Same thing. But anyway, let's start off. Same chapter 22 that we started with. But skip down to verse 15. Judy Richmond, how about that? Chapter 22, verse 15. There you go. My translation says foolishness is bound up, but folly works too, right? So why is the rod necessary? Why is a rod necessary? Judy just read it. Why is it necessary?
To drive the folly away.
To drive the folly out, right? Because in the heart of a child, from birth, is foolishness. Folly. Keep in mind that when the Old Testament, especially the book of Proverbs, talks about foolishness, we talked about this several weeks ago. One of the very first lessons in this series was on the fool. Remember that? Foolishness isn't about being silly and goofy. That's the way we use the word today. Foolishness is a moral concept, right, in the Bible. The fool is the immoral person, the vicious person, the unvirtuous person, right? So in other words, sin is in the heart of a child. We're born this way, right? We're born in sin. As David said in Psalm 51, I was a sinner from the time my mother conceived me, right? Children go astray from the womb, it says in the prophets, right? So because sin and foolishness is in the heart of a child, it has to be driven out. And the way it's driven out, at least a way, the way that Proverbs talks about is how? With the rod, right? With the rod. So I was going to ask y'all, what will the rod accomplish? But we've already said it. It will drive the foolishness out, right? Now that doesn't mean that the rod is going to change their heart necessarily. We'll talk more about that later. But it will modify their behavior in the hope that their heart will follow. Right? We'll come back to that. Skip over to chapter 13. Judy Gregory, how about that? Chapter 13, verse 24.
The one who will not use the rod hates his son, but the one who loves him disciplines him diligently.
Wow. Why? Do you notice how not using the rod, sparing the rod, is equated with hatred? And using it's equated with love? Why? Why is sparing the rod a form of hatred?
Indifference.
Okay. Indifference to what?
To the child.
To the child's needs for that foolishness to be driven out. Right? Right?
I heard heard a story of a lady who would not discipline her child. So when he got old enough to get on his tricycle and take off, he's going down the middle of the street on a tricycle in, you know, terrible danger.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's we're going to come to that, about some of the dangers involved in not disciplining your children. But that's absolutely relevant here, right? It's equated with hate because it's endangering that child, especially endangering their soul in the long run, right? But also endangering their life in this world. The illustration you gave is actually very poignant to me, because there was an example in my own life that's, I don't have to think about somebody else. I remember we lived on a street. It wasn't a real busy street, but still had cars and stuff coming down there occasionally. And I think I was first grade, 5 or 6 years old, maybe. 5 or 6. And our football got kicked out of the yard across the street. I didn't even look at all. I just started across the road to get that football. And a dump truck comes screeching to a halt 2 feet from me. Almost got killed. And we were being babysat by my mom's friend Beverly, and Beverly did not believe in sparing the rod. She grabbed me from one side. She whipped me from one side of the street to the other. She didn't even wait to get me to the house. Right? I never did that again. Right? As far as I remember.
Right? You're probably getting into this. Yeah.
They don't.
Nobody.
Yeah. But I think they're missing something very important. I really do, right? All right, chapter 23. Sandra, how about chapter 23, verses 13 and 14? Yes, ma'am. Yeah, my translation says from Sheol, which is literally, right? But I think you're right. In this context, it probably means the grave or death. And but see, I already alluded to this, right? Ultimately, using the rod saves your child from death and hell, right? Death and hell. That's the goal. That's the hope, right? Driving the folly out of them, right?
Are you still got more about the rod?
No, a couple more things, but go ahead.
In Hebrews, it talks about your heavenly Father
disciplines
the ones that he loves.
That's right. Well, see, that's just it. See, God is just like a father supposed to be, right? If a father using discipline on his son is love, well, then we ought to think about God the same way, right?
And yeah.
That's right.
And even David said in Psalm 23rd Psalm, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort
me. Mm-hmm. Very good. That's excellent. That's right.
Our father never did spank us. Mother had to, and the same thing in my family. Jack never ever touched the kids. They thought he was the saint.
Uh-oh.
And I was the demon.
You was the bad guy. Well, at least you did it. At least you did it. Any other thoughts on that, about how and why the rod can save a child from Sheol, right? From death. Any other thoughts on that? I want you to think about it, right? Suppose that you don't use the rod and your child grows up living an immoral lifestyle, right? Because you didn't train them. You didn't drive the folly out of them. They could wind up in jail. They could wind up on drugs. They could wind up in a ditch dead, right? Right. That's the idea. All right. All of these texts we've looked at so far have looked at discipline from the parent's perspective. But let's take a short detour and take a look at it from the child's point of view, too. Skip all the way back to chapter 5. Proverbs chapter 5. And Larry, would you read verses 11 and 12? Chapter 5, verses 11 and 12.
And at the end of your life, you groan when your flesh and body are consumed, and you say, how I hated discipline, and my heart despised reproof.
Okay. And then, Betty, how about over to chapter 15? Keep your hand there in chapter 5. We'll come back to that. Excuse me. Look at chapter 15 and read verse 32. Betty, would you read that? 15:32. Uh-huh.
He that refuseth instruction despiseth his own soul, but he that heareth reproof getteth understanding.
Okay. So notice that this is looking at discipline from this perspective of the child, right? And what do we learn from those texts? Go back to the one in chapter 5 for a minute, right? The child is talking to himself after he's grown up, right? I think that's the idea here. And he says, at your final end, you groan. Your flesh and your body are consumed. And you say to yourself, I hated discipline. Right? You see? Because the child hated discipline and refused to learn from it, right? He's come to a bad end, right? And similar in chapter 15 that Betty read, right? He who neglects discipline despises himself, right? If you hate discipline, you're hating yourself. That's what it says, right? Because discipline is supposed to be for your good. And if you're not looking out for your good, then you must be hating yourself, you see? Very interesting. So how should a wise child look at discipline? Oliver, how should a wise child look at discipline? As a bad thing or a good thing?
Good.
As a good thing, right? As a good thing. Doesn't mean it's fun. When Beverly was spanking me on the road, I wasn't feeling good. But I look back on that now as something that was valuable to me. It was. So a wise child should look at discipline favorably as good for their soul, right? All right, turn over to chapter 29. Just got a couple more things to look at, but we're almost done. Chapter 29, and notice verse 15. It says, the rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child who gets his own way bring shame to his mother.
One says that a child left to himself causes.
There you go. I think either translation probably works with the Hebrew there. But a child left to himself or a child who gets his own way. Either way, you get the picture, right? A child who isn't corrected with discipline will go his own way. And will, because he's been left to himself, right? That's the child going down the middle of the road on the tricycle you were talking about a while ago, right? But anyway, the idea here, go back through our text. The child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother. So what does the rod bring? Look at the first part of that verse, first part of verse 15. What does the rod bring or give? Gives wisdom. But the child who gets his own way is the child who is not disciplined, who doesn't get the rod, and what will that bring? Disgraces his mother. That's good. Disgraces his mother.
Shame. Mine
says shame too. We could look at this text from either the parent's perspective or the child's perspective. I think maybe both of these are true. The parent, think about it. The parent who fails to discipline their child will be ashamed and should be ashamed when the child grows up and meets disaster, right? But on the other side, the child who grows up to live an unruly or ungodly lifestyle should be ashamed for bringing shame to his mother, because that's what he's doing, right? Well, let's close with one more major point. We looked at formative discipline. We've looked at corrective discipline. Let me now talk about the child's responsibility. We've talked a little bit about this already, but let's talk more about the child's responsibility. Parents, we've seen, have the duty to engage in both formative and corrective discipline of their children. But the child, think about it, the child must accept and receive that discipline in order to benefit from it, right? Even the very best parent who does everything right cannot necessarily instill wisdom in their child. All they can do, to quote Derek Kidner in his commentary, all they can do is encourage the choice to seek it. Seek wisdom, right? So with that in mind, look back to chapter 2. Proverbs chapter 2. And notice the first 5 verses. My son, if you will receive my words and treasure my commandments within you, make your ear attentive to wisdom, incline your heart to understanding. For if you cry for discernment, lift your voice for understanding. If you seek her as silver and search for her as for hidden treasures, then you will discern the fear of the Lord and discover the knowledge of God. Notice that the son is being addressed directly here, right? He's being called upon to listen and respond to his father's instruction. And whether he gains the fear of the Lord and comes to know God ultimately is up to him, not the father, right? He must want it and seek it, the fear of the Lord and the knowledge of the Lord. Skip over to chapter 13. Chapter 13, verse 1 says, a wise son accepts his father's discipline, but a scoffer does not listen to rebuke. Flip back to chapter 10. Chapter 10, verse 5. He who gathers in summer is a son who acts wisely, but he who sleeps in harvest is a son who acts shamefully, right? So in other words, you can teach your children everything they need to know, but if they don't take it to heart, they're going to grow up and be a slothful child, right? Which is an aspect of foolishness. Flip over to chapter 29 again. 29 verse 3. A wise man who loves wisdom makes his father glad, but he who keeps company with harlots wastes his wealth. Not listening to your father's instruction leads you to the prostitute, right? Chapter 15.
And poverty, yep.
Chapter 15, verse 20. 15:20. A wise son makes a father glad, but a foolish man despises his mother. One more. Last one. Chapter 19, verses 26 and 27. 19, 26 and 27. He who assaults his father and drives his mother away is a shameful and disgraceful son. Cease listening, my son, to discipline, and you will stray from the words of knowledge. So what do we learn from these texts? All of these verses assume that the parents have done their job, right? But the child hasn't. That's possible, right?
Does the rod always mean a switch, a bell, a hand? Could it be something else?
I think it can. Now, in the Old Testament times, they probably didn't know much else but the rod, literally. But yeah, I don't think that's the only form of discipline. Corporal punishment, I think, is a necessity. I believe in that. But there are other forms of discipline that are useful and should be used as well. I think there's a place for things like timeouts, for example.
Yes.
Right.
Well, that is a discipline of the body because you make them sit there.
That's exactly right. Also, taking away privileges. That's...
I was glad you said that because I know a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That can't be the only thing, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I don't think that's the whole story, but those things are definitely useful. That's right. But all of these verses assume that parents have done their job, but the child hasn't, right? This is all a good reminder. I want to close on this thought. This is all a very good reminder that the human heart, born in sin, can really only be changed by the grace of God, ultimately, right? That doesn't mean that parents shouldn't do their at their level best to drive the folly from them, right? But ultimately, only God changes the heart, ultimately. And that means we need to be praying, right, constantly for our children.